Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. You always tap into the spot. This here is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome. WTF, what in the Frankenstein are we eating, Brains? I want you to get your taste buds ready, because Allison L. Van Enenenam, PhD from UC Davis, she's here with us on the edge. She's a specialist in animal genomics and biotechnology. She's coming to help us dissect and break down my critical six questions about the meat that we eat. And what in the world is a GMO, a genetically modified organism? We want to know the who, the what, the when, the where, the why, and how are these genetically modified and genetically engineered injections impacting our lives and our food sources. And as a former employee of Monsanto and her work with the FDA, I am sure that she has had to put the knife over the fork many times, and she's got a lot of information and knowledge. We want to be able to provide you with a balanced perspective so that you can make an informed decision here on the edge. So without further ado, Brains, please help me welcome Allison L. Van Enenenam of UC Davis. Hello and welcome to the edge, Allison.
Hi, April. Thanks for having me.
Did I butcher that name?
A little bit, but that's okay. It's not the first
okay,
time.
Okay, roll it out for me. I want to get that. I practiced it for 20 minutes.
It's Van Enenam. It's very Dutch.
Van Enenam.
So yeah, it's my husband's surname, actually, so I'm obviously Australian by the accent.
Oh, I love it. As I shared with you before, I've been to the land down under, and it is amazing. Well, you know, I wanted to share with my brains, and that's what I lovingly call our listeners on the show, that I really kind of ran into a gold mine. My objective originally was to talk about GMOs and genetically modified foods. I have a lot of scientists and researchers here in San Diego, and they've been able to share a seat here on the edge. But then when I got further involved and evolved, I ran into you. I found your profile on the internet, and this is just a wonderful experience because here we're not combative, we're informative, and we want people to understand what it is they're eating, what they're doing, and, you know, and how it's being done. So thank you again. Can you tell me a little bit, to start off our conversation, how you got involved in this area of research, study, and science?
Sure. Well, I'm an animal geneticist, and so I work in the animal science department here at the University of California in Davis. And when I was going through school, I did a genetics PhD 20 years ago now, and that was right at the beginning of the rDNA, or, you know, the genomics revolution. And I was always interested in agriculture and did agricultural science as an undergrad, and was really able to marry together my interest in animal science and genetics with biotechnology and genomics, because it all kind of came together as I was starting my job here about 15 years ago.
Are you an animal lover? Did you grow up around animals as a child?
I did, yeah.
Or on farms or anything like
that? On farms, yeah. In Australia, of course, you know, it's a lot more agricultural. And so I used to ride horses as a kid. And my auntie had a beef cattle farm, and I used to spend my summers up there. So, yeah, I've always had an interest in agriculture and trying to feed people. That was really what motivated me towards agricultural science, was really growing up with some of the hunger issues that were obviously in the newspaper and on the television every day, which, interesting, that doesn't get much coverage anymore. I'm not sure what that says. There's still plenty of hunger, but it just, I guess it's not newsworthy anymore. It's kind of intriguing to me.
Right. Now, for our brains, which we call our lovely listeners here, I'd like for you to give us a clear definition of what is a, number one, a genetically engineered organism, and what is genetically modified? I mean, as far as plant-based and animal-based, so they can get a better understanding of what we're talking about.
No, that's a million-dollar question, isn't it? So we hear this term GMO, and it's genetically modified organism, and that doesn't really have a definition because it really doesn't not very precise. I mean, I would argue a Chihuahua and a Great Dane are genetically modified relative to their ancestors, the wolf, right? So that's just conventional breeding that's done that. So the genetic engineering is, I would argue, a subset of techniques that breeders use to modify animals, and particularly it refers to the use of kind of modern molecular techniques of recombinant DNA technology to kind of introduce useful traits into breeding programs. And that's really usually when people use the term GMO, that's usually what they're talking about, even though that's technically called genetic engineering.
Okay.
So I don't know if that helps. So, for example,
so they kind of cross-pollinate, right?
Well, so it's a subset, I would argue, yeah. So,
right.
For example, you know, like you might have a resistance trait to insects, like the Bacillus thuringiensis trait in that crops that protects them from insects. That's a gene mm-hmm. from a bacteria in a plant that prevents caterpillars from eating the plant. So that's an example of a genetically engineered organism. And there's others like disease-resistant papaya trees in Hawaii. But currently, in my field, there's actually no genetically engineered animals that have ever reached the market for human food consumption in the U.S. There is, if you've ever
that
seen
in
a pet store, there's well, no, there's not. There's the only one that's ever been approved is the fast-growing salmon, and that's not legally allowed to be sold in the United States, although Canada is allowing it to be sold. So there is one country on Earth that allows that to be sold. But if you've been to the pet store and seen those fluorescent fish, the glowfish,
right,
they're genetically
right.
engineered to have a protein that makes them, you know, glow green or orange or red.
Well, now
so
that you said that, let me interject something
yeah.
that's really cool. A neighbor of mine works for the Salk Institute, and they showed how uh-huh. they created different species where he was able to inject illumination into the plants, and so they're encouraging people to have those, and you won't need street lights. I thought that was amazing. You can create a whole new species.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, so just to be clear, and you said this in the introduction, we don't inject anything into the plant. So we're actually modifying the DNA. So what we're doing, we're not injecting anything. It's actually the same way that I inherited like blue eyes from my parents. We're actually putting the gene into the DNA so that it's inherited from generation to generation.
Oh,
there's no injection
okay.
involved. So often you'll see like a scary looking image with some tomato with a, I don't know, insulin syringe in it. That's not how it works. It's actually altering the DNA. So it's
okay.
a hereditary trait that gets passed on.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's great. That's great. Now let's talk a little bit about conventional breeding. In 2010,
okay.
you received a Bronze Award from the Association of Communication Excellence in Agricultural, Natural Resources, and Life Human Science for producing that YouTube video, Animal Biotechnology. In that video, it is stated that you compare genetic engineering and cloning, traditionally animal breeding, artificial insemination, and in vitro fertilization, referring to all of them as biotechnology. Do you think that you oversimplified that?
Well, again, biotechnology, a bit like GMOs, is basically the application of science to living organisms, and you might argue anything is a biotechnology as it relates to science and agriculture because you're applying
right.
science to living organisms. So biotechnology doesn't have a firm definition the same way that GMOs doesn't. Now, genetic engineering does, right? And so I would argue that we use many different sciences applied to animal breeding, including things like artificial insemination and embryo transfer, that are part of conventional breeding programs that typically haven't had a big public furor associated with them. And then, of course, there's now the genetic engineering, which is the one that tends to get everybody upset. And, you know, if you look at artificial insemination, for example, it's used in dairy cattle. That was introduced in the 1940s. And that's had a tremendous impact in terms of improving the genetics of dairy cows. So we used to have about 35 million dairy cows in the U.S. Now we only have 9. Because they're that 9 million, because of the productivity enhancements from genetics. And so the environmental footprint of improved genetics is dramatically reduced for a glass of milk. It's about one third today what it was in the 1940s. And so
in all honesty, the milk is one millionth of what it was. It is different. How does this benefit us? I mean, I know sustainability, long term, but really, how does this support humankind, mankind, as far as our food sources? What is the
well,
benefit?
I mean, I would like to see the data on it, the milk being different. I think that's actually, you know, as a scientist, I have to go on what the evidence says, and I think that the milk isn't different.
Yeah, I'm just going by my taste buds. I'm sorry.
Maybe you were drinking full milk at that, you know, I don't know exactly what you're referring to. I don't think you were around in the 1940s, but I personally wasn't. I know I can say that. But I think more generally, you know, there's a kind of no appreciation of the importance of improvements in breeding as it relates to the environmental footprint of our food production. And, you know, we want really efficient cars, for example. So, you know, you'd rather drive, I don't know, a hybrid than a Hummer. And yet when it comes to agriculture, we want to apply technology and have really efficient production systems as well. And so if we hadn't had those improvements in, for example, the dairy cows, we'd need about 40 to 50 million dairy cows instead of 9 million to produce the milk for the US. That has huge footprint impacts, all right? And so, I mean, just logically, 50 million cows is going to produce more, you know, environmental impacts than 9 million cows, just as a statement. And that's true for plants. And basically, breeders are trying to make plants and animals that are productive, efficient, and healthy in the production systems and minimize their the amount of land that's required to grow our food.
So what is the now you've worked with the FDA as a former employee. What is their position and their take on that? Educate us on that.
I haven't ever worked for the FDA, so I'm not sure where that came from. I was on an advisory committee one time. Yeah,
okay.
I was on an advisory committee. And so the FDA looks at the safety, obviously, of food and drugs. And so they have looked at every commercialized product that's on the market, every GMO on the market, and have concluded that they're safe to eat. They're no different to conventional varieties. And so basically their data is in agreement with every scientific society in the entire world that's come to the same conclusion, which is that there's no unique safety concerns with this particular breeding method. And so, again, as a scientist, I look at the data, and that's what I have to base my opinion on, is that, you know, thousands of studies that have come to that same conclusion, including
some of
the
leaders in the industry.
Well, if you're talking about the seed industry, then, of course, we've got the big boogeyman of Monsanto. But there's also Bayer and Syngenta. There's about six big plant, you know, seed breeding companies. But there's also a lot of public sector researchers working in this area, like Dennis Gonzalez in Hawaii developed the disease-resistant papaya, for example, that's resistant to ring spot. And there's scientists in Uganda that are working on a wilt-resistant banana. There's a lot of public sector scientists in Australia, I know, working on chickens that are only female, so that we don't have to kill the male chickens that are born into the egg-producing facilities. So there's a lot of different applications. It's just really a breeding method that can be used for many different purposes.
Now, you say many different purposes, and you also you interjected the boogeyman or perceived boogeyman as Monsanto. I just kind of want to ask a question here because my brains want to know. With all of this genetic modification and genetic engineering, it was told to me, you know, and like I said, I don't know how true it is, but I'm going to ask the question anyway because your brain and we want to tap into it, that your food choices can also hinder your ability to crave desires for the opposite sex. It also mentions something about autism. It also mentions higher risk of diabetes. Can you give me your perspective from your experience on that?
Bollocks. It's
really
that simple. You know, it's easy to frighten people and say things like that, but there's no data to support that. So, you know, I can say that, but that doesn't make it true.
There's no data yet.
And so, well, we've got, you know, I guess when I look at things as a scientist, I look at what the evidence is to support a statement and what actual data is out there. And
but the thing is, the ultimate premise of science is to always ask the question, always seeking the answer.
And for 20 years, we've looked at that. We've looked at the impacts of eating these products, and there's absolutely no data to suggest the frightening, you know, things you just said about, I don't know, what was it, preferences for the alternate sex. I guess as a biologist, just looking at that as a conceptual question, what would be the biological basis for example, I don't know, a protein for BT altering sexual preferences in humans?
You know what? Because this is a whole nother show. This would be a whole nother show. But it's a conspiracy theory against it could be ethnic cleansing. It could be, you know, the reduction of the population. So, but that's just off to another subject. That's just kind of why I
brought that in. Or it could be a fairy tale. And so I guess
it could very well be, but it's good to always ask the question.
Right. And that's what scientists do, right? And I guess every scientific society in the world, including the National Academy, have all come to the same conclusion. And so unless you think every scientist on Earth is part of a grand conspiracy theory, you know, it just doesn't hold water that many different organizations would come to the conclusion that there's no unique safety risks. And I guess conspiracy theory is, you know, just, it's fun, but it's not objective truth. And I think we have to base our policies and evidence on objective truth, the same we do around vaccinations and climate change, you know. And, I mean, we all trusted the scientists to get it right yesterday on when the eclipse was going to happen, right?
Right.
When it comes to these other issues, it's just
intriguing. I know. I got you. Well, thank you for, you know, clearing that up and staying in your position, because it's very important. But we have to, you know, kind of put that out there. Farmers, growers of organic foods, you know, again, some people's perspective that this could be a marketing ploy. We talk about GMOs. You know, you walk into the grocery store and you see gluten-free, sugar-free, fat-free, you know, a big fat nothing burger with awful sauce, okay? So with all of that going on right now, how do people really, you know, make wise choices in your perspective, you know, from painting a broad stroke of all of your experience, you know, being on the advisory council with FDA and working with Monsanto and your research? How do people make choices? What are we to do? Just go with the flow?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because people often don't make choices based on science. And that's really annoying to scientists, because we tend to be very logic-driven creatures. And people often make decisions based on emotions and kind of a tribal belief, or, you know, maybe they've been scared into buying, you know, some product because they think that they're going to be poisoned by another product, get autism, or, you know, change their sex, gender, or whatever. And I think, you know, I guess, you know,
some people might like that. You never know that. They might put that right next to the in between the gluten and the sugar free.
I don't know how the label for that might read. It would be kind of an intriguing label, wouldn't it? But you know, absence labels kind of play on people's fears, right? Like I've seen, you know, gluten-free bananas. Well, you know, gluten isn't in bananas to start with. And I've seen, you know, GMO-free water.
Right. Well,
there's no GMOs in water. And so a lot of it just plays on people's fears. And almost, you know, it's a little bit disingenuous, because it kind of, you know, suggests that there is in normal water, you know, or in normal bananas. And it's just really I think there's kind of a special place in hell reserved for marketers that do that type of absence labeling that's just misleading and trying to play into people's fears. I think it's just the wrong, you know, if your product's better, say it's better. Don't scare people away from other products by suggesting they're going to give you cancer or give you autism, you know.
It's over the top. Allison, I want to be sure that our brains know about the upcoming documentary, Food Evolution, and also how to get in contact with you. Can you give us some information on that?
Sure. So I was recently in a documentary movie called Food Evolution that I believe is coming out on iTunes on the 29th of this month, and it really is about a lot of the things we've been talking about. That is, how do people make decisions around their food choices? And why is it that, like, these fairy tales get such a strong hold of people? And if you ask people about GMOs, they have an instinctively negative reaction without really knowing where that comes from. And so it really talks about the importance of basing decisions on objective truths and informing policy on that. But it does it in a kind of an interesting and storytelling way. So it's not a boring science documentary.
I checked out the trailer. Please, brains, be sure that you look at that. Food Evolution is going to come out September 29th. Yeah. It's great.
I think it's August 29th, I think, on iTunes. And then
August
Hulu,
29th, okay.
In September it comes out on Hulu, which, of course, is a streaming service. And I'm, as I mentioned, I'm a professor at UC Davis, so I'm not hard to find. If you look at UC Davis, you can find my name, if you can spell it. And then you can see I have a webpage there that talks about the work we do, mostly conventional breeding, selecting for disease resistance in animals, particularly cattle is my area. So I have a lot of fun videos there, some musical parodies that pokes a bit of fun at different things to do with science communication. And, you know, really my interest is trying to make agricultural science more accessible to people, to kind of help people understand where their food comes from and the importance of agricultural innovation and science in food production. Because really, as I mentioned, agriculture has a huge environmental footprint, and anything we can do to improve the efficiency is going to help decrease the amount of land we need to grow our food.
All right. Well, that's what I'm saying. And you know what, Brain? It's very important that we ask the question, because that is what science is based on. We have to use our brain. You have to ask the question. Be sure to challenge the answer. Develop a hypothesis and sometimes activate facts, alternative facts. It's
not
the ultimate. It's the ultimate. You got to produce a conclusion, brains. You got to use your head. And thank you so much for filling our bellies and filling our brains with this information and this knowledge, because, you know, children don't go out and play in the garden and plant the seeds like they used to. We don't work the earth. We've got alternative intelligence and computers. People don't even communicate. So be sure to engage your brain. Think and ask the questions of smart people like Allison. And check out what's going on the edge. Go back to other edgy conversations. We got over 150 and 15,000 listeners worldwide. Everybody is tuning in. We are going to have a great event coming up September the 29th through October 1st. It is our Women's Brain Summit in Julian. 30 women will embark on the hills of Julian here in the San Diego Mountains to be refreshed and be renewed. It's going to be an exciting event. I want to thank our sponsors, Crystal Nails, here in San Diego, California, Charity One. If you are looking for insurance for a nonprofit social service organization, Charity One is the place for you. And also Eyeglass World in La Mesa. Allison, thank you again for informing us. Please come back to the edge. I love you. You're just so entertaining. And smart.
Thanks for the invitation, April. Have a good day.
All right, you too.
Come experience SeaWorld's biggest summer ever. Each night, celebrate with the all-new Electric Ocean, featuring 8 electrifying new experiences, like the glowing Cirque Electric show on Mission Bay, and Illuminite, the all-new show with acrobats, dancers, lasers, and larger-than-life sea creatures. Right now, get your SeaWorld single-day ticket from only $59.99. Light up your summer with the new Electric Ocean, each night at SeaWorld. Restrictions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Omni La Costa Resort & Spa. Located in Carlsbad, just north of San Diego, Omni La Costa offers 400 acres of experiences for the entire family or quiet getaway for two. With 100-foot water slides, 8 sparkling pools, 2 championship golf courses, the spa La Costa, Funtopia, a family poolside party, and more, summer vacation is waiting. For more information about summer activities and specials, visit OmniLaCosta.com.